Welcome to Roots from LNER. I'm Clara Ampho. Hello. Now, every episode, we're going to journey through my special guest travel stories, exploring the destinations and experiences that have shaped them. And today on the show, Candice Brathwaite.
Our dads of that age would take pictures really badly.
And oh my God.
I wish I had a too close selfie of this moment.
Yeah, yeah. A selfie taken with an iPad.
And I always romanticize the people who are traveling and they've got a good old hardback in their hands. That's the new Chanel handbag for me.
It's but it's chic.
I'm like, ooh. I remember the school I went to, you didn't have to wear a school uniform and my granddad put me in school uniform. Do you know how mad that is?
Oh, absolutely mad, but also not surprising in the slightest. Grab that window seat, reserve your spot with our seat selector. Visit lner.co.uk/reserve seat. Today on the show, Candice Brathwaite, a Bodderin, and it's not Braithwaite, don't you even dare. Just in case you didn't know. Well, like, as I said, today I'm joined by a two-time Sunday Times bestselling author, a podcaster, a champion of motherhood and true diversity and inclusivity, and a wonderful friend of mine. It is Candice Brathwaite. Candice.
Hi, babe.
Welcome to Roots with LNER. Now, my lovely producer, I can hear my earring jingling. Is that going to stress you lot out? Or are we okay? It's stressing you out, isn't it? Listen, dear listener, I am every audio professional's worst nightmare because I love a big earring. But on this occasion, we'll forfeit the fashions. Okay, so Candice, on today's episode of Roots, we are on our way to Edinburgh. Off to lovely, sunny Scotland. Well, sunny sometimes in the summertime, but sunny in disposition. I love Scottish people, don't you?
I love them.
Love the Scots. Everything sounds bare in a Scottish accent. So we are on our way to Edinburgh, my friend. Okay, so we are going to talk about travel, about your life, about your journeys, I guess, physically, emotionally, all of it. Because if there's one person I know who's been on some journeys, it is you, Candice. Okay, so first of all, let's talk about, I guess, your first ever memory of travel?
It would definitely be going to my dad's because I was born and raised in South London and my dad was then a North/East London boy. So it was always crossing the river and he'd always take me via Tower Bridge because I was obsessed with Tower Bridge. And there were the few times that we had to wait because it was opening. So locally for me, it was that postcode tenseness, like a deep South girl, then going to like Walthamstow, Tottenham, Islington and feeling very, very out of place. And then as I got a bit older, taking the train up there by myself. Yeah, that's the first thing I can remember about leaving that SW2 postcode.
And tell me about those train journeys that you went on when you got older. Ooh. What did that make you feel like a big girl?
Big girl?
Yeah.
What do you, like, no one could chat to you. Although it's so funny, Victoria Line, you're just going from end to end, like Brixton to Walthamstow, so there wasn't much to do. But it made me feel like very mature. And also, I think my dad not living in South London gave me the liberty and the encouragement to explore London in a way that my friends wouldn't. Mm. They were very like, no, this is what we know. This is, you know, where we stay. And I'm like, no, but I've heard there's a good rave in North, so let's go. And there was also, of course, the privilege of being a girl them times. I think if I was a boy, I would have been a little bit more cautious. But it made me just be like, no, we can get the train anywhere. We can do, like, I'm such a supporter of public transport. I'm such a supporter of trains. I'm like, sometimes just take yourself out of your comfort zone and go somewhere new.
Absolutely. And speaking about going like new places, do you remember the first journey that you took outside of London, like by yourself or with your friends to another part of the UK?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Year four, we did this thing at school where we went to somewhere called The Croft, which was like a 3-day residential. I'm not even sure where it was, but it was like a 4-hour coach journey and you're completely in the sticks. And we were all so like nervous, geared up, excited, so like learning to camp, just doing all the things that as a South London black girl, I was never doing day to day. That was amazing. You're really making me think. That was a brilliant, brilliant thing. And also it kind of made me want to explore the countryside more, or gave me an idea that no, not everyone lives in a city. the city isn't everything. That was a big deal for us. We were like, oh my gosh, these people like walk a mile to the shop and it's so quiet here and it's so green. You can feel that the air is fresher. That made something turn in my head a little bit, I think.
Well, it's really interesting you speaking about that, because I know obviously in your adult life,
yeah,
you don't live in central London anymore. And even though I know you're a London girl in your core, you are essentially, I wouldn't say in the sticks, but you're like...
Yeah, well, no, we're in the sticks.
I mean, you're outside the M20. You're outside the M25. So your children are having a completely different childhood experience to you. I guess how do you navigate that, actually? Because there's a certain sensibility that one has, you know, growing up in ends, for want of a better phrase. And then, you know, you're bringing up your kids completely differently. So how are you, I guess, working to shape their view of the UK at large and them exploring outside of what they know?
Do you know what? I'm not going to lie to you, with great difficulty. I first brought Richard. So Esme was born in London. She doesn't remember it because we left when she was about 3-4. But RJ wasn't born in London. And I first brought him into the city proper. Like, we'd driven in, seen family, but I mean, tube, train, 18 months ago. Wow. Wow. His response to the hustle, the bustle, the noise. I remember like us waiting for the train and him just putting his hands on his ears and screaming as a fast train went past because he's just not used to the velocity. I was just like, I felt a bit bad. I was like, have I not been doing this enough? You know, we get onto the tube and he's like, oh, mum, this is so scary. He thought red buses were red fire engines.
Wow.
He was like, why are there so many fire engines here today? I was like, baby, that's a double decker, bro. I was like, and you know what? I got home, had this conversation with my husband, Bode, and Bode was like, Candice, he doesn't even get the bus here. Like, no bus comes to our home. To get a bus, you need to walk maybe a mile and a half. Like, where we live, it's car or nothing. He doesn't get a bus to... So essentially, RJ's never even been on a bus.
That's so fascinating.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Also, like, very, it made me really deep. Like, no, I've got a country bumpkin boy. That's like so crazy. Like, he knows nothing but green pastures. When he comes into London, he's like, bro, he went to cross the road and didn't realize he had to press a button to cross the road. So he just stepped and I had to drag him back by his
hand. I literally just saw your hand like...
Literally, I was like, boy. Like
comedy style. Like, yeah.
And he was like, he doesn't even understand the concept of how to cross a busy road.
Wow.
I was like, you press this button, you watch this man. When that beeps and goes green, I literally had to teach him how to cross the road in that moment. Because we live like down quiet, villagey country lanes. There's hardly ever cars. If there are, they're driving so slow. Like, we don't have a pedestrian crossing. There's no button.
Right.
And so I feel a bit ashamed, but also quite proud in a strange way to be raising, especially black children, so differently to what we typically know and understand. I will say though, my stepdaughter has just moved in with us and she is from Brixton like me. And it's interesting to have more in common with my stepkid than my biological kids. Because we can go toe for toe on how you move in a certain space, the code switch, the safety. And my kids are just sitting there like, don't know what you guys are talking about. She has a street smarts and an edge that I really, really love and adore. I'm like, okay, now Renee, that's her name. Now Renee's here. Esme, you can go to the shopping center with Renee.
Because you know, because she's going to be protected.
She knows how to manage herself.
Exactly.
You don't know that yet. And so to see their lives like submerge and cross over, it's really interesting because for a couple of nights, Renee couldn't sleep because she found it too quiet.
Gosh.
She was like, it's so deathly silent here. I cannot fall. So to watch their lives do this based on their location, mind blowing.
It truly is. And I'm thinking about, I guess, the family time that you have outside of the school term.
Yeah.
So with what you've just discussed and you guys spending time together within the UK, are you a staycation family? Like, do you holiday within the UK, I guess, knowing your kids' temperament? Or are you very much like, kids, where go? I mean, I know you love New York.
Yeah. We're a very much fly out family, not UK. And I tell you why. I've recently found to do a staycation with a family of five can be just as expensive. as leaving the country. So I'm like, more time, let's go away. Although we all collectively love Wales. We went up there on a brand trip once and we all fell in love with it. So there is a bit, it's like, are we going to Wales? Okay, yeah, we can manage that. And I love Bath, which isn't that far away from our home. But whenever I get to Bath, I feel like I'm in a storybook or a fairy tale. I'm like, this place is the business. So I'm not, and also now, actually, I'm like, this year, we didn't have a family holiday. It was staycation, stay home. Because I was like, it can't be all the time. And our last family holiday was Christmas in New York. Right. My credit card is still on the BP machine in recovery. Like, dude.
I'm like, we still got it. Come on, I'm charge.
Like, no, it's a staycation year. You lot are good for it. But it's quite difficult with them, especially my biological kids, because they are around such privileged people who are always away. Oh, we're skiing, darling. We're in Dubai. And then, you know, Esme, not so much. Because Esme was born when money was a lot tighter, she's got an attitude of, I'm just grateful to do whatever. Richard, on the other hand, why aren't I skiing? I'm like, bro, you got skiing funds. We live near a ski center. You better be happy with that. But no, this year we have done staycations more and I don't mind them. I tell you what I do love to do though. I love to do staycations by myself.
Yes.
Myself or like with two very close girlfriends, a little trip in the UK. That is my jam.
Tell me your stories. Where have you been? What have you done?
And the thing is, we don't even go far. We stayed in this cab. I can't even, I'm not even going to shout them out, but we stayed in this cabin once, in literally in the middle of nowhere. And like, you've got to like build your own fire. And that just felt so good because your brain has to shut off. Also, there was no phone signal or like one bar. Yeah. And we all needed it. And I'm like, it just allowed us to have respite of mind, good conversation with each other. So I'm very big on having a staycation by myself or with my girlfriends. Absolutely. Not with Bode, just because he's a terrible camper. Like, if we're going to do staycation with him, he still wants a 5-star hotel. I'm like, it kind of defeats the
purpose. He's that guy.
He's that guy.
Gotcha.
Like, I will hunker down. I will do backpack. I will fly whatever class or go in whatever class of a train is available for the experience of it. Bode's just like, no business class. Oh, don't worry.
Bougie Bode.
He's like, don't worry about it.
That's what a nickname is now. Bougie Bode.
So bougie.
I love that you like to do this by yourself.
Yes.
Because I wonder, you know, as someone with a public profile, you know, and you, a lot of the content that we see from you is you directly addressing people.
Yeah.
You know, you share a lot of yourself online, whether that is a fun outfit or your thoughts on motherhood or, you know, a thoughts on like healing yourself, all of that stuff. So to have that time alone must be so precious. Was it quite difficult to do at the start?
Never.
Okay.
I've never been afraid to travel alone, eat alone. I'm big on eating alone. Love to say table for one very loudly. And maybe it's because I was an only child till I was 8. I'm very comfortable with my own company. I love to just sit with my thoughts or read a book or think a thing or people watch. And for me, traveling alone is just bliss. I don't want to be beholden to anyone else's schedule or them wanting to do a different thing or there being an argument about where we're eating. Especially when I'm on a holiday or on a break, I want to be on my own time and my own timetable. And I think there's something so powerful about Black women traveling alone.
Oh yeah.
That it's just, I'm not going to say it's always easy, but there is something really powerful about it. And you learn so much about your resourcefulness, your resilience. And so, yeah, I'm just big on going alone. Yeah.
Do you remember the first solo trip you took by yourself?
First solo trip I took by myself.
Were you one of those teenage backpackers? Was that you?
Did you do the Indonesia thing or the Thailand thing? So I did India for 4 months, but I went as part of like a little cohort. There was a charity back then sending, hate to use the word, but underprivileged young people to like Indonesia, India. And so I went to India and I remember actually that when it came back, listen, I thought they were going to send me to Ghana because Ghana was on the list and I was like, I fit the bill. So when it came back India, I didn't even just pause. I said a few swear words. I was like, are you sure about that? And I remember calling my dad almost on the verge of tears, being like, I don't know if I can do this. And he was like, you absolutely have to give it a bash. He was like, it's going to be uncomfortable, but you have to go. And yet I did a 4-month stint in India. And I've got to say, even now, that was some of the, how can I put it? It was hard. It was really hard because the people I was around, they were just like, you can't possibly be black and British. That's not a thing. They're like, you're from Africa, you're lying. Also, why is your English so good? Why are your clothes so nice? Mm. The visuals the Indians I was around had on black people at the time was destitute, less than us. So how could you possibly come here and help us or help us with the English? That it was, oh my God, it just blew my brain out. And I've often said, I would like to go back. Now I'm a lot older and like I've grown in self and I'd probably stand up for myself a bit more. Mm. But absolutely, you know what? My dad was right. Game changer of a trip. So much so that I came straight back from there and I was like, right, I've got no money, but I really like to travel. So I became an au pair. And my next stint was supposed to be a year as an au pair in Napoli in Italy.
I did not know this about
Babe,
you.
Babe, yeah. But my dad died 3 months into that stint. And that just changed the entire landscape of my life. But yeah, and that's why, you know, off camera, I was saying like, I have 4 coffees a day. I remember it was my Italian house dad who taught me the art of coffee. And we'd always have coffee with dessert. But yeah, my dad died almost, you know, a quarter into that journey. So that kind of changed that. But your girl's been about.
You have traveled.
Yeah.
You've lived. But this is the thing. I guess it goes back to what you're saying about there is power in black women who travel alone.
Yes.
For sure. And there's just power in travel, period. Because the thing is, you have no idea that those people that you met when you went to India, some of them might have even seen you on social media now.
I know.
And they might be like, hang on a minute. But that was the girl that I thought was this and that and
yeah.
that. And she's doing this now.
And my host family in Italy, they always message me and they're like, we're so proud of you. Because obviously they saw me immediately at the lowest moment of my life.
Mm.
Like I remember they'd gone out to like visit family for the day. And they did say, do you want to come with? And I was like, no, I'm too tired. And I found out my dad had died alone in that house. And so I had to call them and they immediately drove 3 hours back, like, help me. Like, there was just no discussion. They helped me pack my stuff. And to some degree, they were like more family than family in that moment mm-hmm. because they had to literally help me figure it all out. And so, yeah, I feel somewhat indebted to them and that entire experience because it's an experience I wouldn't have had if not for my dad's push anyway. And so even now, 16 years after he's died, every time I do a new thing, I'm just like, yep, and dad would tell you to double down on that. Like, do you get what I'm saying? So it's, yeah, I've been about.
Do you know what? I really feel you on that because, you know, I'm in the Dead Dad Club as well.
Yeah.
And my dad loved to travel. And anytime I go somewhere new, I always think, oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, he'd love me being here.
Yeah. Like, you know, I wish I could have that moment of like, you know, when they just, our dads of that age would take pictures really badly.
I'm my God.
I wish I had a too close selfie of this moment.
Yeah, yeah. Right? A selfie taken with an iPad. Here I am in Italy, in Egypt,
you know what
or like,
I mean?
or like a staycation. Like, here I am in, I don't know, like Tunbridge Wells
exactly.
or whatever. Just, yeah, that documentation of uncles of a certain era. Like, you truly can't beat it. You really, really, really can't. I have to talk to you about writing
yes.
because if there's one thing you're going to do is get inspiration mm-hmm. on your travels. Can you talk to me about how traveling has affected you as a writer? 2-time Sunday Times bestseller.
It has been 3 out of 4 books. They really took shape on flights. So especially the last book, Manifesto, most of that was written to and from New York back and forth. It's just part and parcel of how good writing happens for me. Also, the people watching that happens during travel or watching how people interact or how certain cultures manage their emotions or how certain cultures cross over. I don't think I hands down wouldn't be as good a writer if I didn't travel. Mm. That's a strong statement, but now I sit here and think about it, it is definitely where I get a lot of inspiration and also that peace and respite to be like, I'm just going to sit here for 5 hours and bash this out. Yeah, it's everything.
No, I fully believe what you said. I don't think it's an outlandish thing to say. Like, yeah. Of course travel makes you a better writer, whether you're taking a 20-minute walk around the corner
absolutely.
And observing your local area, or whether you are going across the pond. Like,
and you yeah. know, there's something really magical about, especially, and I'm not just saying it because of this podcast, especially a long train journey when that landscape changes from city to just green, and you get to almost dream up a person, a concept, a relationship. It's an amazing feeling.
Well, that's it, because you've done one fiction,
yeah.
three non-fiction,
and my next one's fiction, adult fiction.
So you're going back/going forward.
Yeah.
What would you say has been fed by travel the best? Like, when you've had to look inward to yourself, or when you've had to make up other people?
Making up other people, right. I'm so sick of looking inward. You know, we're the generation of therapy. I'm sick of that.
Yeah.
Like, I love to make up stories, and I do love to break hearts. For me, the best stories are where everyone's just heartbroken, or there's this big love, this big energy, and it just doesn't quite arrive. I'm very fantastical in that way. I'm a Pisces, so I'm dreamlike in that way. I love fiction.
Mm.
And I love taking little bits from people that I know or have met and being like, oh, it's like making a magic potion, stirring up that pot and then creating a character or a scenario. I'm like, do, 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 do.
Tell me this. Have any of the inspirations from your characters been like, hang on a minute.
Do you know what? Quite a few times.
You know that scene in Euphoria, like, hang on, is this play about us?
Quite a few times.
Right.
And you know what? And not to like anyone's detriment, but my friends who read things, they're like, oh, even if they don't recognize themselves, they recognize people in our friendship circle. Mm. They're like, oh, that's giving very much. I'm like, uh-huh. Yes, it is. And also, I think why no one holds me to it is because I do it to myself the most. I'm very good at... Actually, I'm far better at recognizing my negative characteristics than my positive ones. I know innately what I'm not good at, what I could be better at, where I'm not showing up as the best. And sometimes I even pour that into my work.
Mm.
There's a part of me that, you know, in the next 10 years, all I want to do is tell stories and somewhat pull back from this public profile.
Mm.
Yeah, this just happened to be the way I got things done on this timeline. If I was older, I certainly wouldn't be as public. And now I'm getting older, I'm like, more of that, less of that. And, you know, to be able to be older and travel and work in a way that really pleases me, it's really important. So much so that I've already told my kids, I'm like, I know you guys are really young, but just hold off on the grandkids thing, because I'm not the one. I'm not here for the babysitting or none of that. Mother is going to be in the south of France, so you
enjoying the coins enjoying that book money.
Listen, you lot need to figure it out, because I can't be rushing back to babysit no one's children.
Respect. I fully respect.
Although Bode's so down for it. Bode's like, I'll be here, don't worry. I'm like, you're...
He would be a great dad.
I'm like, I hear you, sir.
He's got a very caring spirit.
He's so like, yeah, don't worry, I've got you. I'm like, you said you want a rum shack in Barbados. Like, figure it out. Pick a struggle.
But
like,
you're going to be in the south of France.
And, honey.
That's all we need to know. look, it'd be remiss of me not to talk about your latest book,
yeah.
Manifesto.
Yeah.
So I guess, I mean, I kind of know the answer to this, but I also don't know, because it's ever evolving.
Mm.
Do you now believe in this moment that you've manifested the life you've always wanted?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes a little too much. You know, when they're like, oh, you've girl bossed a bit close to the sun.
Yeah.
I'm manifesting a bit too close to the sun.
Yeah.
Because, and I only say that, again, we were having this conversation earlier. It's one thing to dream a thing, to manifest it. To live it can feel so different. And I always say, many men can acquire, few can maintain. You can get a thing, can you keep it? Mm-hmm. You can manifest a thing. What does the maintenance on that thing look and feel like? And so I'm at a point where I'm very much not in the business right now of manifesting physical things, but I am manifesting feelings, experiences, clarity. I'm like, girl, I'm good for things. Everything's great, but also there is a pressure to maintaining those things, to this dream house that I thought of. Okay, what I didn't consider is needing a housekeeper for 3 days a week. Do you get what? Even with the blessing, you're just like, oh, there's a little added extra because everything needs upkeep. Mm. And so to some degree, I am moving away from the capitalistic idea that more things are better. That is what's going to heal me.
No,
honey,
yes.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm like, we can press pause on that for a second. What does freedom look like? I've made the decision to buy a house with my best mate in Jamaica. We said in the next 15 years, we're going to go halves on a house in the Blue Mountains in Jamaica. Like that for me is now the things that really like give me the fizzies. It's not always the new handbag, a bigger car. Okay, cool, rest. Where will I be resting? Where will I be traveling to? What does the investment in 50 and 60 year old Candice look like now, just before 40? Though that's where my brain's at.
I think that's really powerful. And I think it's great that you can be so, I mean, I know you said you're sick of looking inwards, but this is the result of the work. This is the result of doing it on me again. But I think a lot of people, I think there's a lot of shame attached, or maybe there's a hesitance to admit that, oh my gosh, I just wanted that bag because I wanted to keep up with everybody, or
facts.
I wanted that house, or I wanted
or
that relationship.
I felt low in confidence,
exactly.
Or I thought that was going to boost my profile. Or, you know, I thought the bag was going to give me entry to a room that I thought I was absolutely, oh no, you know I'm never too big to be like, and especially a woman like me who's come from where I've come from, where the answer always seemed to be fame, money, things. Mm-hmm. That's how you get access, respect, power. And now to have accrued those things and now be like, actually, it's just so much more powerful to lead with my authentic self. Mm-hmm. And I've actually been in places where I've turned my handbag inwards because I'm like, oh, this is a bit gauche, actually. I could have just wore any old handbag. I don't need it anymore. It's cute, but I don't need it.
And I think that's so powerful because, do you know what? Regardless of whether you have a public profile or not, a lot of people, I think, still don't accept that they're healing themselves with like external things, especially.
That's all we've been trained to do.
But that's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's all we've been trained to do. And I'm just like, there is literally more than that. And I'm also at a stage in my life where I just feel so blessed. I often say if this was the cap, you'd get no complaints from me. Like if someone on the storyline was like, and this is what, you know, no more for her. I absolutely hear that. You know, I do now want to think about what I'm doing with my resources and not just my money, my time, not just my time, my voice, my platform. What am I doing with these resources to help other people, to help other communities? Like when I tell you, sometimes I'm just awake till 2 a.m.
Just thinking. But look, I've sent you random screenshots over time. Because I remember there's been a few times when friends of mine have read your book and I've been like, do you know what? Let me send this to Candy just so she knows that it's working.
Yeah. And I think, and you would know this as well, when you're so locked into the work, when you're the one with the public profile, sometimes getting the feedback you want is so hard because our infrastructure says these likes are it, this review is it, this. And I'm like, no, is the work landing? Mm-hmm. Is someone sitting at home reading my work and going, I'm absolutely going to give this one more shot. I'm absolutely deserving of the dreams. That's the thing for me that I'm like, and breathe.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this. What are you reading outside of yourself to make you feel that?
I am working, oh gosh, I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm working through a book right now called The Artist's Way. Oh my God.
Oh yes, a classic, a classic.
Yeah. I've even just got an immediate headache. This book is absolutely beating my backside because it makes you do so much internal work. And I will say to people, it's less of a reading book, much more of a doing book. You must do the task. You must sit with yourself and sit on some questions and do the inward hard work. So that's where I am. I'm also reading a book called Someday Maybe, which is a piece of fiction by a Black African writer, which is about the main character, a Black African woman, her husband dying by suicide. And it is, I am grief obsessed. As part of the Dead Dads Club, mm-hmm. anything involving grief and how people process it, I am very much for. And the book just makes me laugh in ways that only someone who has suffered tragic loss can do.
Yeah.
And so I'm reading that as a piece of fiction. But yeah, The Artist's Way is like the first thing right now.
So these are the books you're taking like on your train journey to the beach,
absolutely, mm-hmm. absolutely. What's really interesting is I'm quite a slow reader and I also don't suffer bad books. You know, some people will not be liking the book and they'll continue because they're like, oh, just cause. I don't have to finish it.
No, same.
Like, I'm not liking.
I like that with films. I'm a film completist. If the film is rubbish, I'll watch it to the end. But if it's a rubbish book,
I'm like, no. I've literally got better things to do with my time. And I used to be a big audio book listener and I've now swung completely the other way. Mm-hmm. I don't even like to read books on my phone. I'm a hardback girl. I like to smell it and feel it. And I always romanticize the people who are traveling, train, plane, whatever, and they've got a good old hardback in their hands. Mm. There's something very, that's the new Chanel handbag for me.
It's but it's chic. Do you know what's so funny? As you said that, I was thinking the other day, like I think it was even earlier this week, I saw a girl and she was engrossed in her book, walking, like, you know, usually we see people on their phones, not looking up. She was reading the book, not looking up. And I thought, gosh, that must be amazing.
You know what I'm saying? It is chic. Oh, look at them go.
Reading is good, guys. You heard it here first. Talk to you about your book tour. You went up and down, up and down. Now you went to Edinburgh. Talk to me about that experience. Like, again, seeing your people, your community that you've built in front of you outside of where you were brought up.
That whole tour was very insane. And also it was a desperate boost to my confidence that I needed. I think in our working world, we can get so bogged down with the digital of everything. The numbers, again, the likes, the online attention. And I'm like, is any of this working? To travel the UK and see people come in their hundreds, sometimes thousands, to hear me speak for 2 hours, it just blew my little brain off. And it also gave me great understanding of how wide my net is and how wide and varied my audience is. And, you know, I think being born in London, we can always think so London centric and da, 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 da. And I was saying to my tour manager, I was like, no, we must go as far as possible because not everyone, we're not even, you know, many people don't even think about the accessibility of coming into London, the cost of coming into London. I wanted to show my readers that I respect them enough to meet them where they are at, you know?
So meeting your Scottish readers.
Oh my God.
You loved hearing your name said in that accent.
And do you know what was so funny? I don't know why I never think about it like that. Again, it's just such a London-centric mind. When we were listing out the dates for the tour, I was like, no one's going to come and see me there. No one's gonna, and they were like, are you crazy? I was like, I don't know why. I was like, Hackney, yeah, sure, sell out. Give me 2 dates. But everywhere.
Sorry, I couldn't make that, by the way.
Oh, don't worry about it. Yeah. I was like, no, I'm not sure. No, do be sure. And also the beautiful thing, because I know I've said a lot of negative things about it. The beautiful thing about the internet is that's the power. You can build an audience far wide and international. And I think many of us who have those profiles, we should try and travel to those places and meet those people.
If you've got the means, why not?
Yeah.
There's not, you know, look, again, doing a public facing job, I don't think enough people really take time to realize what a privilege it is to have people let you into their like houses, whether it's via radio, whether it's via books. It's like, because not everybody likes everybody. So for somebody to invest in like in your book or what you say, it's a gift.
I take it, when I say I take it so to heart, to the point that at the London show, our mutual Tolly who interviewed me, she was like, listen, I know that there's this kind of hazy plan for you to turn 40 and have someone delete all your digitals. And that's always, I'm like, but I just don't want to do this. And she was like, please think about perhaps the negative impact that has on women that look like you, that come to your spaces, that engage with your work in this way, who are like, I'm going to give it a try. Or Candice is doing. And it really made me pause because I think so much of the work of late, I've selfishly been going like, I can't wait to be done with this phase of my life. And she was like, just spare a thought for the women you're leaving behind. Spare a thought for younger Candice who would have loved to have come online and seen an image of herself living well, having fun. She said, I feel like women like us, we get to a certain point, and rightfully so, because we've had to work harder, the burden's been heavier, and we're just like, okay, clock off time. But she's like, and then some of us are just left empty because we're like, where's that person? What are they doing? You know, and it's made me think about my next steps a little bit.
That's really valid.
Yeah.
That's so
valid. I'd never thought about it. I was just like...
Mic dropped.
I was like, okay.
Now, I'm going to switch up a little bit.
Yeah.
I got to talk to you about the outer stuff.
Yes.
Don't get me wrong. I know we just had this really deep conversation about not putting too much on material things, which two things can be true at the same time, exactly. Dear listener. But Candice, there's one thing I know you're going to do. Just turn out and look. The fashions, the clothes, the colours.
That, you know, that's my joy.
OOTD.
You know that it's just...
All of that.
It's just my... It's my joy. And I had a conversation yesterday that I think is really fitting here also, because someone was like, where did that joy come from? And I was like, interestingly, it came from my granddad, who would casually Monday to Friday just walk around in a three-piece suit. When I had this conversation with him finally, he was like, oh, you know, I never thought about it much, but it helped shield me from racism. He said, when I first came to this country, I noticed how, you know, there was just an edge on how well I was treated if I was spick and span, if the suit was sharp. If I was in my day-to-day jeans and overcoat, no blacks, no dogs, no Irish. Mm-hmm. Presenting myself in a really sharp manner was my protection. It's the way I got the job. Now, I was raised by my maternal grandfather. I was in his sole care from the ages of 0 to 10. I remember the school I went to, you didn't have to wear a school uniform, and my granddad put me in school uniform. Do you know how mad that is?
Oh.
Do you know how?
No, that's... do you know how? The funny thing is, it's absolutely mad, but also not surprising in the slightest.
He fashioned a uniform. Like, I had a grey pinafore and a navy cardigan for a school that had no uniform. Mm. And he also, when I had hair, he used to iron my hair ribbons with starch in the morning. He was so almost obsessive about looking well put together. And that has bled into my life. I also took ballroom classes from the ages of 4 to 11. Like the dresses, the pomp, the hairspray, the drama. And so as much as I sit here and I'm like, oh, you know, it's just a bit of fun. It's not, it's just weaved into my DNA. Mm. I love feeling good about what I'm wearing. Doesn't always have to be a 6-inch heel or you know, a tight. Or...
I won't lie, I was surprised you're wearing trainers today.
I knew that!
I was like, if Candice is going to come in with a red lip, standard. And a good shoe. Obviously, the trainers are fab.
When I walked in and Laura saw me, she was like, yeah, you're tired.
Yeah.
Converse, wow. No, you're tired.
I genuinely expect one of your fab platforms.
And you know what?
Yeah.
I wear a good trainer every day, but I, you know, the top's a bit jazzy. But I just enjoy, and more to the point, the reason why I share my joy of dressing up is, again, women that look like us, we don't get to see that.
I know, that's right.
We don't get to see that. And also, if we do get to see that, it can sometimes be overly and overtly sexualized, and you know, you're dressing this way to sell a thing or be positioned as whatever, or it's like, I can't afford to have fun with my clothes, be that by way of finances or emotionally or spirit. And so me sharing that joy, and someone left a comment the other day that kind of blew my mind, and she was like, whilst I love watching you get dressed, I love watching your children watch you get dressed even more. And I never even thought about that. She was like, you've got no idea what you're doing to your kids' confidence when you're like in this camera and they're watching you enjoy the whole I was like, I never I never for once considered that. But yeah.
It's so true. Because I think when I think about great biographies I've read, particularly by female actors, and they'll always talk about, you know, when I was a little girl, I used to watch my mum put her makeup on.
Yeah.
I used to watch my mum get dressed and I thought she was the most beautiful woman in the world. And it's such a continuing theme in pop culture and people's biographies.
Yeah.
Watching your mum get dressed.
And you know what? I think the same. I remember watching my nan get dressed, my mum get dressed. And I remember my mum and her best mate, they were like thick as thieves and they used to wear 6-inch heels every day, and they'd like stomp to Brixton Station in their faux furs. It was ridiculous on the most amazing level. Mm. And I remember just being like 11, spotty and moody, being like, one day.
And then look, you manifested and the day it. Came. You manifested the life you always wanted. Okay, so let me ask you this. With that wardrobe of yours, because we've all seen it. If you haven't, check out Can's Instagram. You've got a lovely, beautifully lit walk-in wardrobe. I'll tell you what, you inspired me to change how I arrange my shoes in my wardrobe. So you do one facing you,
yeah,
and one facing away, so you can see the heel and the front. And I was like, you know what? Yes. So no, big credit where it's due. Because no, that's such a good hat. So when you're traveling,
yeah,
does one like yourself travel light? Is that possible?
Absolutely not.
Because I'm a hand luggage only, babe.
You're joking.
I wish I was. Actually, I don't wish I was. I've managed to finesse doing the hand luggage only.
How?
Because I know I figured out a colour palette. It depends where I'm going. If I'm going out of the UK, I've got a colour palette. I work out, if I'm doing 6 or 7 days, I work out interchangeable looks, my mini washing up stuff, interchangeable t-shirts. Yeah, and I've managed to find a really good hand luggage thing and I can do hand luggage only. Now that's, I'm just speaking for myself. You now.
Does no, for a 4-day trip to New York once I took 3 suitcases.
The whole 23 kilograms. Full to the brim. I'm not judging, I'm just asking.
And you know what? It wasn't 23, it was 32.
Lord have mercy.
Listen,
3.
No, because do you know, there is nothing as gutting as an outfit you can't reach.
Do you know what? That's very fair.
There's nothing, you know, the schedule changes and you're like, if only. And I've had that moment so many times that whilst I'm like, okay, I'm doing this, this and this and these, I'm like, okay, an extra one, an accidental one, and it all just kinds of rolls into each other. Also, the amount I can end up, quote unquote, accidentally spending in New York, but they would rather pay for the extra luggage. He's like, you know what? Let's pay on this end because it's so much more expensive paying. So no, I try. And my mates are travel lighters. Like, we clear passport checkout and they can just like toddle off, but they all have to wait for me because I got to wait for...
Yes, this is what they're all...
You got to wait for my baggage, baby.
No, this is the thing. Do you know what?
You got to wait for my baggage.
My biggest pet hate with any kind of travel is waiting for that one person. Like, that's what I like to check. I checked it online, straight onto wherever I need to go, but, and it's you.
And you know what? Last time I went with my best mate to Jamaica, my luggage was so lost, we thought it was lost.
Right.
Like, I was crying. I was like, this cannot be happening to me. We'd walked off, we'd gone to speak to people, and then the belt just went, doo, and there was my case, like, sadly making its way around. Oh, gosh, the drama. It's like, no, please don't ever let that happen to me, please.
So when you are with this luggage reunited,
yeah,
and you open up your suitcase,
yeah,
what kind of packing are we seeing?
We're packing cubes, okay, yeah.
Okay, she's that girl.
Yeah, packing cubes, everything arranged, also immediate unpacker. Both when I'm at the destination and when I get home. Bode's even worse than me. Bode unpacks and does laundry at 3 a.m. He's like, the washing machine's going on right now.
That is a level of adulting that I only aspire to. Because let me tell you now, shall I confess something to you?
Have you just...
I've come back from holidays. And that suitcase has been in my living room maybe 2 weeks later. You know, it's embarrassing.
I can't function. And I think that is Bode's doing though, because right. I'm sure there was a time I could, but now I'm just like, but especially destination, I've always been that babe. I'm like, and I'm also a big steamer.
Like, oh yeah, that I don't
yeah,
play with.
Yeah, I'm like, get these wrinkles out, sort it. It's just one less thing, yeah.
I just, 3 a.m. laundry.
3 a.m.
No, because people call you mum and dad on the internet really
but
for
a reason. But we really are mum and dad.
Like, well and truly. Do you know what? I just got a flashback of when I hosted the Black Panther premiere, and I remember I saw you and Bonnie when we were coming out of the cinema, and I was like, are you coming to the afters?
And we were like, home time.
You're like, no, we're going home. Probably to do laundry and prepare for your next holiday. Now, I've got to talk to you about New York City, our mutual love, an amazing place to travel around, whether you're on subway, on foot, whatever. When did you first fall in love with New York? Because I know that in your heart of heart, you want to live there. And look, listen, baby, I might be your neighbor.
Listen, we'll talk after. Anyway, I first went to New York when I was 8 months old. I can't remember that. My nan is one of 15 children.
And there's a big Jamaican community there, isn't
yeah.
there?
Yeah. She's one of 15 and she was the only one that came to the UK. A couple stayed in Barbados.
Oh, my bad. Yeah. So it's
my maternal side.
Of your family tree.
Yeah.
So it's...
Maternal side is Bajan. Paternal side is Jamaican.
Got it.
But there's a huge Caribbean community in New York, especially like Flatbush side. And about 10 of her siblings went to live in New York. So she'd constantly go and see them. And I think from about the age of 4, I just remember a summer so hot, you could crack an egg on that sidewalk. Fire hydrants bust open left, right and center. Ice cream man constantly going, double Dutch. Like, it's like a scene from a movie. Girls sat out on the stoop getting their hair done, and me just being like, don't know what it is, but I'll take 14 more of them right now. Like, put it in my veins. This is incredible. And that moment is so like, it's seeded into my core that I think that's why I'm so intent on living there. What's interesting though, I know I won't live there forever. It's the kind of city that I'm perhaps only willing to give 10 years because it's...
Just a casual decade.
Just a casual decade. You know why? Because Bode and I have this conversation a lot. He's like, so we left London to move to the sticks, to move to a city that is... some would say is even like more of a rat race than London. He was like, what are we really doing? And I'm like, oh, it's just for the storyline. It's just for bants. It's just for the energy. My children, every other week, they're like, are we going yet? Are we ready? I'll leave school right now. What do you need? Like, they're so mentally done with here. Mm. And you know, not to get heavy, I just see it as a place where a woman like me can prosper a little more.
Get heavy, please.
Listen, have a little bit more fun. Build a network and a community that's really going to help her heal. I love London with all my heart. Of course, I was born here. But there's sometimes I find the UK to be very punched down. Very punched down. Very blatant glass ceiling. Very, please, sir, can I have some more type vibes. The energy I'm met with specifically in New York City is... what was that idea you had? I know someone that can help. Give me your email. I'm going to text them. It's immediate.
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? Because I think the thing that I love about the British sensibility is like we can take the piss out of each other like anything. And it is a thing of like, but then at the same time, if you dare to dream just a little bit too big.
Just too big.
Sometimes it's like, are you sure? But over there it is like,
more.
Let's get it popping.
They're like, put this dream on steroids to the point that I've even started to be a little bit more quiet about my intent here in the UK. And I don't like that for me. I'm like, no one should feel that way. And so, yeah, New York is where my heart is, mate.
Well, let me ask you this. Once the 10 years is over and you do complete your New York jaunt for the bants, for the plot, where are the three places in the UK that you'd like to visit?
The three places.
I know you've mentioned Bath that you love. It feels like a story.
Love Bath.
I know you love Wales. Where gonna else?
Go. So I've only been there once, but Gleneagles, absolutely stunning. Just the energy, the people, the culture, definitely Gleneagles. Oh my gosh, do you know what? I've got a huge confession. I've never been to Margate.
Interesting.
I've never been to Margate, and like Margate's given like the UK Shoreditch right now.
It's essentially a very trendy place by the sea.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm gonna get to Margate, and I want to go
art scene.
Back to Brighton because I've not been to Brighton in ages, and again, their scene has completely changed.
I can see you enjoying those three places for sure. I think you're a Brighton babe, actually.
Do you think so?
I think you're a Margate babe for a day trip.
I don't think I'm
but I think for lifestyle you're definitely a Brighton babe. For sure. Candice, thank you so very much for joining us on Roots with LNER. Candice's new book, Manifesto, is out now. As always, one, rate and review. And if you enjoyed the episode, because let's be honest, how could you not have? Give us a follow wherever you get your podcasts. Also, look out for Candice's Quiet Coach episode, which is going to drop next week. We're going to hear about her traveling snacks, tracks and hacks and what places have inspired and changed her. Until then, see you at the next stop. Get credit when you join LNER Perks. Visit lner.co.uk/perks. Roots from LNER, a distorted production.